Chapter 15. Escape from Ishmael. Ishmael's men continued to round up the people of Mizpah, and as I waited in the square, I remembered that the field commanders had warned Gedaliah that Ishmael was working for Baalis, the king of the Ammonites. They had said that he had been sent to kill Gedaliah. At the time, it had seemed ridiculous. Why would Baalis pick a fight with the Chaldeans by killing the governor they had appointed? But now it seemed the only explanation that made any sense. As I wondered what to do, I was surprised by a voice from behind. "I see they got you too, Jeremiah." I turned and saw that it was Baruch. "Yes," I said. By that time the square was quite crowded, but I didn't want to be overheard. "Do you know where Gedaliah is?" I asked urgently, but as quietly as I could. "Do you have any news?"
"Isn't Gedaliah here? I thought he must be the one organizing all of this, and I wondered what was going on."
"I'm worried about him," I said. "Ishmael over there, do you know him?" Baruch nodded, and the look on his face wasn't complimentary to Ishmael.
"I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him," he said. "I did some work for him once."
"Well, he and his men seem to have murdered at least 70 men so far today, and probably Gedaliah as well." As quickly as possible, I explained the news that I had heard from the pilgrims. Just as I finished, I saw Ishmael looking at us. "Stop looking so shocked," I hissed urgently, "or we might be the next to go. Ishmael has spotted us and is coming this way with one of his men." A thrill of fear went through me. Ishmael made his way through the crowd right up to us, the soldier close at his heels, sword in hand.
"Baruch," said Ishmael brusquely, ignoring me completely, "we need a scribe. We have to send a message to Johanan and his friends."
"You mean Johanan, the son of Kareah?"
"Yes, Mr. High and Mighty Johanan."
"Do you have any paper? Your soldier wouldn't let me bring any with me, or any ink or pens. I don't think he liked the look of my scribe's knife."
"There should be some in the administration offices. They're not far away. Go with Ram," he gestured to the soldier who stood behind him, "and find whatever you need to write the message. Ram knows what the message is and will tell you what to write."
Baruch agreed and left with Ram, while Ishmael returned to his place, supervising his men. Ram and Baruch were gone for quite a while, and as time passed, Ishmael grew more and more on edge. When he sent out the soldiers to continue the search for others in the city, he urged them to hurry. Time, he said, was short, and we must all leave soon. I wondered what that meant. Baruch was still absent when another voice came from behind. This time the speaker was Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian who had saved my life so courageously when I had been thrown into a cistern deep in the palace.
"Excuse me, sir, I'm sorry to see that you have been caught again. I had hoped that God might have taken you away as he did with Elijah."
"God doesn't do those sorts of things in modern times. And anyway, he only did it with his great prophets, not people like me. I'm glad to see you, Ebed-Melech, but sorry to see you here. I thought that you would be out at your farm, beyond the reach of this latest disaster."
"I came in to bring some food for the governor. So much food has grown in just the last month, it's amazing. I've never done any farming before, and I thought it must be hard based on the complaining I've heard so often from farmers, but this has been easy."
"I wish you had stayed on the farm today."
"Yahweh must have wanted me here. Let's wait and see what happens."
As we spoke, Baruch at last returned, accompanied by Ram. They skirted the crowd, making their way towards Ishmael. "Follow me," I said to Ebed-Melech, and began to force my way through the crowd to where Ishmael stood. I didn't want to get too close, but I did want to hear what was said.
"Here is the message, my lord," said Ram, holding up a sealed scroll. "It's all ready to be sent."
"Give it here," said Ishmael. "I'll just read it quickly."
Well, sir," said Ram doubtfully, "you can if you want to, but it's all sealed up. I used your seal."
"That's all right," he said, taking the scroll. We can seal it up again before you leave.
We don't have any more clay here for sealing, said Baruch, seeming ill at ease.
Well, I guess it doesn't really need sealing at all, said Ishmael, turning the scroll around to locate the seal. Ram will be the one carrying the message anyway.
I doubt that Johanan will believe that a message like that is from you if it isn't sealed, said Baruch. Would you trust an unsealed scroll with a message like that?
Maybe not, said Ishmael, but we can still seal it again later.
Excuse me, sir, said Ram, but don't you want to leave as soon as possible? We don't want to get surprised here. We'd be badly outnumbered if Johanan turned up where he wasn't wanted.
Yes, you're right, said Ishmael,
looking around as if he expected to see Johanan stride arrogantly into the square at any moment.
Anyway, did you and Baruch discuss the message at all?
Yes, replied Ram. Baruch suggested some minor changes, and I agreed to them. It is very nicely worded, sir. Convincing.
Ishmael looked satisfied and gave the scroll back to Ram, who tucked it away in the bag he had slung across his shoulders. The two hurried away, and I made my way to Baruch with Ebed-Melech behind me. What were you looking worried about? I asked. Baruch greeted Ebed-Melech warmly and then said softly, I was terrified that he was going to open that scroll. You see, while I was writing the message, Ram had to leave the room for a few minutes, so I took the opportunity to scrawl a quick note to Johanan, telling him what had really happened. After Ram had read over Ishmael's message, I suggested that it would be best to seal it up before we went back, otherwise there would be a delay while Ishmael went to get some clay to seal it. He agreed, and I took the scroll and rolled it up tightly, taking care to slip my message inside it first. Then I quickly tied the string around the outside and folded the clay over it, and Ram sealed it with Ishmael's seal. No wonder you are worried. I talked with Ram as we walked there, and he hinted that Gedaliah was dead. Then, when we went into Gedaliah's office, there was dried blood everywhere. I looked at him straight and asked him whether they had killed Gedaliah and all of his men. He admitted that they had, and then I made an inspired guess, asking him what had happened to the Chaldean soldiers in the city. He said that they had killed all of them, too. I think my mouth may have been hanging open as he explained all of this. I was overcome by the scale of Ishmael's crimes and wondered where this would all lead. I was glad that my mother had not been forced to suffer this extra disaster, particularly given that she had known Gedaliah since he was a baby.
That wasn't all, Baruch continued. Ram also mentioned that we will all be leaving Mizpah soon, hurrying to Balas, the king of the Ammonites, but taking a roundabout way through Gibeon so that Johanan and the others will never guess where we've gone. So I put that in my note as well.
How did you get him to be so talkative?
Baruch laughed. Oh, I was just my normal friendly self. But then he became serious again. How could they have been so brutal? He asked. So many killed, and all to help Balas? Does that traitor Ishmael seriously think he can get away with it?
I think he is about as humble as Johanan. Probably. Those field commanders all seem to think that they are the only ones who know anything about anything.
Ebed-Melech had been listening to this conversation, but looked rather lost as he tried to catch up with the terrible news.
Are you saying that Ishmael and his men have killed Gedaliah?
He asked.
Yes, along with all of his men, all of the Chaldeans, and about 70 pilgrims who were innocently passing through, I said.
And now he is planning to go across to the Ammonites and take us with him?
So it appears.
And you, Baruch, wrote a secret note to go with Ishmael's message? What would have happened if he had found the note?
I suppose he would have killed me, Baruch answered simply. But Johanan had to know the truth. If Ram is going to deliver this message, I asked Baruk, what will he do when he sees Johanan open Ishmael's message and take out your note?
Baruk looked at me with wide eyes and said, I hadn't thought about that.
Well, I don't think we need to worry about it. God said that he would look after you, didn't he?
He has certainly been doing so today, and I'm sure he will find a way to make it work.
Ebed-Melech nodded, but Baruk still looked worried for a few moments. Then he shrugged, smiled a little crookedly, and said,
Yes, I suppose he will.
Listen to me, everyone,
shouted Ishmael as his men tried to quiet the crowd.
We're sorry to cause you all such inconvenience today, but it was the only way to save your lives. You may hear a few stories flying about, but most of them are wrong. I thought it was important to tell you all the truth, so that you will know what is really going on.
He had everyone's attention by then, and I was amazed to hear that he planned to tell us the truth.
You all know that Gedaliah was appointed governor by Nebuchadnezzar, said Ishmael, and we all trusted him to negotiate with the Chaldeans on our behalf. Unfortunately, though, Gedaliah has turned traitor. We trusted him, and he has betrayed us. Just yesterday I went to see him, and he tried to convince me to help him in his terrible plans. Me, a member of the royal family of Judah. He wanted me to stay here and keep you all calm and quiet while he went north to fetch more Chaldean soldiers. He plans to bring them back here and kill everyone in the city, on the pretext that some of you have been planning to rebel.
The surviving pilgrims were sitting in one corner of the square with two of Ishmael's soldiers nearby. One of the pilgrims began to stand. It was clear that he wanted to say something, but the soldier nearest him laid a hand threateningly on his sword hilt, and the man subsided. Baruk, Ebed-Melech, and I were looking at each other, but we all decided that it was best to keep silent. So this was the truth, as Ishmael saw it, or at least the tale he wanted us to believe. Where would it lead us, I wondered.
We are very lucky to have found this out before the Chaldeans arrived to slaughter us all, continued Ishmael, but now we need to escape as quickly as possible, heading south. I and my men will help to lead you to safety, but time is of the essence. We need to leave right now. There is no time for any of you to gather any more belongings or anything else. No time even for questions. Follow me, and be very careful to obey any instructions that my men give you.
Ishmael turned and led the people to the gate of Mizpah, a crowd of worried people following him. As I walked through the gate, I wondered what we could do. Soldiers marched both in front and behind, hurrying the rest of the crowd as we set off southward. Ram had left some time before, travelling to the place where the other field commanders had been gathered. There was no way of knowing, but I wondered whether the trigger for Ishmael's brutal rampage had been the fact that he had not been invited to that gathering of field commanders. We walked southward as quickly as Ishmael and his men could drive us, but it was not like a marching column of soldiers, or even a caravan of traders used to travelling together. Instead, it was a mixed group of young and old, men and women, boys and girls, and we set a slow pace that clearly upset Ishmael. When we reached the place where the road to Gibeon branched off from the main road, we followed it, Ishmael and his men relaxing visibly once we were out of sight of the main road. Birds were already flying overhead when I awoke in the early dawn. We had stopped for the night near the great pool in Gibeon, and it had been brought home to me again just how few people were left in Judah. Gibeon had changed from the bustling, busy town that I remembered when I had been travelling around Judah and Israel delivering God's warnings into a quiet, empty shell. There were no city guardians to challenge Ishmael or question his intentions with such a large company of people. We had settled down to camp for the night near the pool, but only a few inhabitants had walked timidly past us to fetch water. Soon after our arrival, Ram had hurried up the road, fresh from delivering the message to Johanan. Apparently, he had handed over the scroll and left before it was opened.
Baruch and I looked at each other and smiled when we heard this. God had indeed taken care of Baruch, just as we had been confident he would. Ishmael and his men said nothing explicitly to suggest that we were prisoners, but they did make it clear that we shouldn't move far from where we were lying. Darkness fell, and those of us who knew more of the truth of Ishmael's behaviour took the opportunity to share some of our knowledge with others. Before we all settled down to sleep, most people knew about the deaths of Gedaliah, the Chaldean soldiers, and the 70 pilgrims. As survivors of the terrible destruction of the kingdom of Judah, this was just another disaster that threatened their survival. Nobody wanted to challenge Ishmael with their new knowledge, though, and it was a subdued group of people who prepared for sleep that night. Few were carrying any bedding, so most of us had to make do with the traveller's bed, cloaks wrapped closely around us, with a few layers folded under the hip and a flat stone for a pillow. Ishmael's 10 men were spread around us in twos, but no unexpected events disturbed our rest, and when I opened my eyes in the morning, it was still too dark to see any movement around me. The only visible activity was in the autumn sky above, where birds were travelling south to avoid the coming cold of winter. No sun was yet visible, but the slowly growing light in the east heralded its approach. The waning moon, a delicate sliver of exquisite beauty, hung just above the horizon with a halo of light surrounding it. Once again, God had delivered a scene of transcendent loveliness just when I needed a little encouragement. It seemed ridiculous to think that this largesse had been prepared exclusively for me, but it was not hard to appreciate its beauty and praise God for it. In looking back over my life, I am amazed by the number of times when I can remember God being revealed as the master artist through the beauty of a sunrise or sunset, or even a passing alignment of common events that for an instant touches the heart with wonder. God was encouraging me again, but I still mourned the loss of one with whom I could share my appreciation of his gentle hand. My mother was dead, and there was no one with whom I could share my thankfulness. I was about to start praying when I heard a voice from next to me, proving me wrong. The voice was quiet, but filled with a sense of wonder. "Sir, do you see the moon just hanging there, waiting for the sun to come up and join it? How could anyone see such a heavenly sight without worshipping the King of Heaven?" It was Ebed-Melech, also awake in the early dawn, and we lay side by side for a few moments, captive to the beauty that God puts on show for any who look for it. Then I broke the silence, taking the opportunity to explain how prayer, coupled with the beauty seen in sunrises and sunsets, had been a tower of strength to me through over 40 years of prophesying. After that, we each prayed, alone in a crowd that was being guarded by a group of ruthless killers who felt completely in control of events without any need for Yahweh. The noises of migrating birds continued to float down on the breezes, and gradually the encampment awoke, and we concluded our urgent prayers for God's protection. I didn't notice anything unusual until a man near us asked, "Who are they?" He was pointing towards the road by which we had arrived the previous night. A group of maybe 100 men was hurrying along the road towards us.
"Halt!"
shouted the guard who was closest to the approaching men. They ignored him, drawing quickly closer.
"Isn't the man at the front Johanan, the son of Korea?" asked Ebed-Melech.
"I think you're right," I said, peering at the group, "and I think those two running close to each other are the sons of Ephi. They look so alike." The news spread rapidly through the crowd that Judean soldiers were approaching with the famous field commanders leading them.
"Johanan has come to save us," shouted someone,
and many cheered.
"Let's escape from Ishmael and his men while they're too busy to stop us,"
yelled another, and a chorus of voices agreed. Ishmael's men had gathered together to meet the threat of Johanan and his men, and their swords were ready in their hands. For a few moments at least, they were ignoring us, and some of the group began to run towards the approaching soldiers, skirting around Ishmael and his men. Some of the men saw the breakaway and moved to cut off their escape, but Ishmael called them back. Soon all of us had run past our erstwhile guards and were hurrying towards the oncoming rescuers, who were moving much more slowly now as they neared Ishmael's band.
"Give up, Ishmael," shouted Johanan.
"Never," replied Ishmael. "You are all traitors, friends of the Chaldeans, cowards."
At that, Johanan ran forward, with his men close behind. He struck at Ishmael with his sword, but the stroke was parried. The soldiers with Johanan each picked their own target, and battle was joined. Johanan had more men, but it was clear that Ishmael's men were far better trained. However, the overwhelming force of numbers was with Johanan, and it was not long before Ishmael and his men turned and ran, leaving behind two men who lay dead on the road. More of Johanan's men had fallen, but the victory was his. There were many greetings and explanations, and eventually everyone agreed that it would be best to return to Mizpah. Within 2 hours, we were all back in Mizpah, and everyone, including Johanan and his men, could see for themselves the piled bodies of pilgrims, Chaldean soldiers, and Gedaliah's men filling the cistern of Asa. Everyone was terrified. All of the Chaldean soldiers that Nebuchadnezzar had left were dead. Gedaliah and his staff were dead also, and everybody could see that retribution was sure to come. Nebuchadnezzar's recent fury against Jerusalem would be as nothing compared with his response to this atrocity. No one was willing to stay in Mizpah. There were too many dead bodies and too much that promised death to the living. To stay seemed to be to invite inevitable destruction by the Chaldeans. By the end of the afternoon of our return from Gibeon, everyone was on edge. How long would it be before an army marched over the horizon and brought our doom? The field commanders met and decided that we must leave the very next morning. Anything that could not be left behind must be packed before dawn. It rained heavily that night, and we left first thing in the morning. Our destination? It was not decided yet, but somewhere south of Jerusalem, the most recent target of Nebuchadnezzar's fury. Fear lent speed to fleeing feet, and before night fell, the company had reached Kimham's Inn at Bethlehem. Our destination was settled too, Egypt. We had planned to continue our journey the following morning, but that night it rained heavily again, and the difficult roads soothed the most urgent worries of most. The rainy season had started early, and winter was now upon us. Surely no angry Chaldean army would pursue until winter had passed and the rains had eased? No, there was no hurry. Food was plentiful in Bethlehem, and who would want to travel so far in such wintry weather?